And I'm recording. Oh, okay. Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. Hey.
Hey, ho. Welcome. You know, I'm so glad we don't do that.
I'm really vibrating today is how I would describe myself.
I am too. I don't know because we do the astrology episodes and then I forget what all the dates are after immediately. And so I don't remember if anything is shifting right now, but I will say from last night to this morning, things feel different and I'm feeling much better. And I don't know if you are as well. I don't know if that was...
I don't feel any different of myself as last night. I did sleep wildly heavily, both today and yesterday. I did that thing where, I went to sleep and then I went kind of back to bed, and in that back to bed, man, I slept like I was dead in some ways I haven't in a minute, which is refreshing. And maybe that's why I'm buzzing. Yeah, I think maybe I'm buzzing due to a second sleep kind of situation.
Yeah. But last week we briefly talked about the man who came through your line when we worked at that grocery store in high school.
With his lips sewn together, yes.
Correct. And
I'll never forget. There will be never a day in my life in which I forget that experience.
Me either. Me either. And I told that story to some friends this week because we had talked about it, and it sparked us talking about a handful of kind of other related incidents at our local grocery store here in Altadena. And so I just wanted to share a little bit of grocery store stuff with you.
Less scary. Go on.
You be the judge of that.
All right, I'll decide. I'll tell you. Okay.
So this, it was a Ralph's, which is the California version of Kroger. It's actually Kroger owned by Kroger.
Yeah. Kroger sneakily, listen, if you shop at King Supers, you shop at Kroger. If you shop at Mariano's, you shop at Kroger. Just so you guys know. Go on.
There was a Ralph's that was near where we're staying and near where my friend lives that I used to shop at when I lived here before also. And it always kind of had an interesting cast of characters at the register and shopping. And it's unfortunately not here now because I was actually looking forward to going back to this store and seeing if the same employees were there, because there was this one woman who
there's always one.
She was just very quiet, but she always had different casts on different parts of her body. I don't know why, but it would just change all the time. And I always hope that it wasn't a domestic violence situation, but rather that she was a gymnast or something.
Had one of those brittle bone things. We went to school with a kid like that.
I've also known some brittle bones people. Avian bone syndrome. I don't know if that's right.
I don't think that's what it's called. Go on. Stop likening humans to birds. Okay.
So there was a guy that worked at the register who was probably 18 or 19, and he was a goth kid, but extremely pale and everything else is totally black. And then he would wear these white contacts that made the pinpoint pupils,
Oh yeah, those are kind of
And so the checkout experience was always unsettling no matter what. But then there was also these people I didn't see, but my friend has talked about multiple times. There is this group of women that he has seen multiple times at that grocery store, and there's probably 10 of them total, but there will be three or four in the store at a time together. And they have shaved heads. These are all white women. And they're all wearing just a tall tee, just a white long t-shirt with no pants
vibes happening.
Or no visible pants. And they're always buying gallons of water, and they go around the store holding hands, three across.
I mean, I feel like that's gotta be some sort of cult shit, right?
I know. And then he saw them one time when he was driving up in the mountains. He saw them walking on the side of the road. And
yeah, I mean, okay.
So
that's probably why they need the water for that hike.
Ooh. For that hike, yeah. So I don't know what's going on with that. That grocery store is not here anymore, but I've definitely had my eyes peeled.
Would you ever follow people in a cult just to see where it led?
That's why I want to come across them.
That's so dangerous, though. Can you imagine?
I can.
That's how a movie starts that doesn't end well for you.
Or does it? I don't know.
No. It doesn't. You don't follow a cult. You don't follow bees into the hive to the queen, you know?
You could follow them to the hive, but not go in, maybe.
Once you're there and the bees have spotted you at their hive.
This is true. I have to pretend to be a bee as well.
Well, I don't know about that. Right. I don't know about that. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
You made that up. Listen.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Yes. Good night.
We would take Jamie's grandma's underwear, run them underwater, put them all in the freezer.
All of them, though. So there were none.
Literally every pair. Ooh, quick pause for a thermometer read. Do you believe in hypnosis?
Like ethically?
Lisa Frank went to high school with the Romneys. And then I'm going to have the second mouth on my back.
That needs feeding.
Needs feeding. Welcome. Why Are You Like This? This is the weekly podcast where we dissect our proximity to potential cults, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, astrology. We offend people with our refusal to dismiss pseudoscience.
We do
it all in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Bryan coming at you not live from Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams, also not live. It'd be weird if she was live alone in Chicago. Can you imagine if we pre-recorded my half of the show?
I just reacted to it. I kind of feel like that's what the kids do on TikTok with the duet feature.
That is what duet is, yeah.
I'm on TikTok now. It's fine.
That's good. That's good. You need to know about it or you're going to fall culturally behind, I feel like. I just know. Engage with it enough to, like, continue to be able to do my job.
Yeah, I'm on TikTok now. And I had a couple friends who were like, no, you need to come to the talk yeah. side. And you know what? I'll say there is some content on there which I am truly enjoying.
Oh, absolutely. And have you gotten to witch talk by chance?
I don't understand all of this. Like, here's the thing.
It's so just your algorithm. You just watch enough videos to point you in a certain direction.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I know it's all algorithm shit. I just appreciate how people have, like, named, like, segments of the talk algorithm. Like, you're like, oh, I'm over here, like, on, like, black TikTok or, like, gay TikTok or, like, mm-hmm. whatever it is. I actually would say I'm a large part of my TikTok algorithm does seem to be I'm on trans TikTok, and I'm not mad about it. So
that's great. Yeah. Yeah. But witch talk, let me know when you get there. It is.
What is witch is talk?
It's just, like, a lot of, like, witch videos and information. It's just witch TikTok.
All right. Well.
You just watch enough, like, esoteric, like, spoozy or, like, esoteric or, like, medicinal shit kind of all together, and you start to
it starts
to present you with various witches.
All right, I'm not mad about that. No. But you know what, we're not here to talk about witch talk or any other fucking
for
talk.
Sure. No
tick tick, motherfuckers. But we are here, hello, welcome, with our semi-final, penultimate, if you will, episode of Spooktober. We are going to bring you a little special wrap-up of the whole experience, so stay tuned. But the last topic we're breaking down this hallowed Treehouse of Horror Eve is really, at our core, how all of us are moral hypocrites. It's dark, yeah. Right?
It is. Dark. I can throw some organ music in there.
Oh, add it. Cue the organ. Cue the organ for dramatic effect. Okay. But I want to, as we get into this, I want to talk about a couple other traits just up at the top. And
for sure.
And we'll then, you know, break down what is moral hypocrisy really, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's some shit to get into. So listen. We are some blinkered and dogmatic motherfuckers, okay?
I know. Yep.
And it's not just that we are malicious and unforgiving. We humans are worryingly close-minded. Let's start there, okay? If people were in fact rational and open-minded, then the straightforward way to correct someone else's false beliefs would be to present them with some relevant facts.
Okay? Sure.
And doesn't always I was on a whole conversation with my mom the other night about, like, how do we even have terms like fake news and alternative facts in our zeitgeist? Like, how did we get this way? But truly, that may perhaps be an entirely other episode. Here's the thing. However, okay, we know that would be the way to do it, right? A modern classic published in 1967, a little psychological study, shows the futility of this approach. Participants who believed strongly for or against the death penalty completely ignored facts that undermined their position, actually doubling down on their initial view.
Nothing makes me more upset than someone doubling down often. It, like, lights a special little rage fire in me, but I'm sure I do it too, so go on.
Okay. This seems to occur in part because we see opposing facts as undermining our sense of identity.
Mmm. Oh, some entitlement bullshit.
And it doesn't help that many of us are overconfident about how much we understand things. And
shout out to the overconfidence episode if you want more on that.
Truly shout out to the overconfidence episode. I feel like it's going to come up more than once today. And that we believe our opinions are superior to others. This deters us from seeking out future relevant knowledge. Okay?
Whoops.
Don't love it. Lots of overconfidence vibes. And truly, this made me think the 2016 election. So rewind back to the year of our Lord before our demise, 2016.
Sure, yeah.
I just always want to get called by pollsters. It, I think, really stems...
I do not.
It just really stems from, like, a deep love of the West Wing. And I don't know, I just appreciate the experience. And I was having dinner at my parents' house, and the phone rang, and it was like a Las Vegas area code, and it was, you know, like a couple weeks before the election. And I was like, oh my God, I think this might be a pollster. I have to answer it. And so I was like, sorry, guys. And then I was like, hello. And then I was like, it's a, and I remember mouthing to my parents, like, it's a fucking pollster. And then I ran upstairs to my, like, childhood bedroom. And then I was on the phone with the pollster for, like, I mean, over half an hour. I was like,
you gave him the time. You gave him the time. Yeah.
I gave him the time. Well, I feel like I wanted my people to be represented, my millennial kinds, because I feel like we're not the ones who are answering the pollster things. But reading about this, I just bring up being, you know, in a pollster situation that I was very excited about, which I really could talk more about. But one of the things that they do is they ask you, like, your opinions about a bunch of things, and then they tell you some more information, and then they ask you the same thing.
Whoa.
They go, like, now
that's
that
an amazing strategy. Then you figure
change?
Out you figure out who can never, like, be swayed, basically, like, who will just continue to ignore information.
Sure. Well, I know that's not all polling, you know what I mean? Like, that's not the only thing that they're doing, but that was the experience I had. And a lot of it was about Supreme Court justice stuff. Wow, we're living the same experience live.
We are.
But they were talking about, you know, how do you feel about this? And they're like, what if you were given, like, you know, these people said this and this said this. Like, now that you've heard this, you know, what I've told you, like, here's the same thing. How would you rate how you feel about it now? Which I was like, huh. And I will say there were some things that I was like, I do feel like that sheds different light on. And there are other things that I was like, nope, not changing my fucking mind. So there's that. But, you know, in addition to all that shitty doubling down, we're also pretty vain. And again, as we mentioned, overconfident. So let's talk about that a little bit further, right? Our irrationality and dogmatism might be not so bad, right? If they weren't married, or, you know, really, if they were married, I guess I should say, with some humility and self-insight. But actually, here's dark shit, right? Most of us walk around with an inflated views of our abilities and qualities. Goes back to the overconfidence issue, our episode. And we, you know, are overconfident about things like our driving skills, our intelligence, our attractiveness.
And we will ignore things that tell us that we're not a very good driver.
We absolutely will ignore those things. And a phenomenon that's been dubbed as the Lake Wabegon effect, after the fictional town where all women are strong, men are good looking, and all children are above average. It's that kind of overconfidence.
I've literally never heard of that.
Well, Lake Way Be Gone effect. There you go.
I'll be looking into it.
It's a fictional town, so.
Yeah, I know, but just as a concept, you know.
Okay. Ironically, the least skilled among us are the most prone to overconfidence. Mm. This is the so-called Dunning-Kruger effect, which really doesn't bode well, you know, big confidence for being the least skilled.
No, and my dad always used to, so my dad is a graphic artist and a musician, and he always like struggled with confidence despite being like very skilled and talented. And mm-hmm. he always used to say that to those that God didn't give talent, he gave confidence as a compensation prize. Oh. And I really enjoy that. Yeah.
I'm not mad about that. That's really funny. What a way to, like, also inflate your ego a little bit. Be like, well, to those
well, right, it's
I could
like,
have confidence or I could be fucking talented. Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love it very much. Well, listen, this vain self-enhancement seems to be most extreme and irrational in the case of our morality. So here we are Yikes. Getting to the point. Such as in how kind of principled and fair we think we are, okay?
Mm.
So this brings us to moral hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. What is moral hypocrisy, you ask?
I am, actually. Yes.
Ask away. Okay, great. Moral hypocrisy is the motivation to appear moral while, if possible, avoiding the cost of being moral.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, okay.
This Wanting is to have in it all. Opposition to moral integrity, which is the motivation to act in accord with moral principles, mm-hmm. which is to just actually be moral.
Right, exactly. Just to, like, anyway, just be moral anyway. Yeah, regardless of what else is happening.
Totally.
How you look.
And a really obvious example of a hypocrite would be, like, a person who says, like, oh, I really care about the environment, but they're, like, constantly littering.
Just, yeah, like, constantly. yeah, constantly. I saw a man the other day come out of a tire shop right by where I'm going to live, and he just, like, whipped his mask off, and it just fell to the sidewalk, and he kept walking. And I was like, wow.
There's a lot of mask litter these days, and it doesn't feel good.
It doesn't.
Nope. Guys, come on. Help. Okay. Someone who practices hypocrisy, so who pretends to hold beliefs, right? If you're a practicing hypocrite.
A practicer. Uh-huh.
A practicing hypocrite.
A practitioner.
You know,
I'm sorry.
You know, yes. You go to temple on Saturdays, church on Sundays for hypocrisy. A practicing hypocrite. Okay. So there's someone who pretends to hold beliefs or whose actions are not consistent with their claimed beliefs. Mm-hmm. And wow, hi, I just have some Christianity feelings about loving the neighbor right here.
1,000%, yeah.
But that kind of brings me also to the fact that, like, we're all moral hypocrites, because am I telling you that these people are worse than me? Let's get into
Ooh, yeah. This is like when the Schadenfreude episode made me realize that, like, I experience Schadenfreude about Republicans sometimes, and that made me feel dark and weird.
Well, that's worth examining.
So it's happening again, and I'm ready.
Okay, it's happening live. So we are moral hypocrites, right? Not mm-hmm. only do we tend to overestimate our own virtuousness, it's coming in some of that overconfidence shit, we're mm-hmm. also inclined to moral hypocrisy. And findings in this area suggest it may pay to be wary of those who are the quickest and loudest in condemning the moral failings of others.
Oh.
The chances are the moral preacher is as guilty themselves. But, of course, they happen to take a fair, you know, and far lighter view of their own transgressions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, so, like, we talked about earlier in this series, like, the feeling of, like, if you feel like you're kind of, like, at the bottom, like, to pull someone else down creates the illusion of, like, elevating yourself.
100%. And honestly, telling me that folks out here casting the first stones, if we were to make this about some shit.
I was ready to. I was holding my tongue about it. I was.
Okay. If we're saying that those people casting those first stones are, like, maybe assholes, that mm-hmm. doesn't feel like a huge shock to me. I'm not like, wow, I can't believe.
Nope.
But this also does speaking of so many callbacks, which I feel like we're going to have in this episode, mm-hmm. this does remind me of the narcissism stuff we've talked through recently, because it seems to also have the vibrations of like, the rules don't apply to me.
Yes, 1,000% it does, but it's me. Exact.
Like, it's me. So in one study to show this, suitably titled The Duality of Virtue, Deconstructing the Moral Hypocrite, researchers found that people rated the exact same selfish behavior, giving oneself the quicker and easier of two experimental tasks on offer, as far less fair when perpetuated by others than by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If I can.
Yeah, please.
I'm going to just give you the little abstract on this experiment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the present study examined the processes giving rise to moral hypocrisy, a phenomenon in which individuals judge their own transgressions to be less morally objectionable than the same transgressions enacted by others.
Mm-hmm.
Two alternative models of the source of hypocrisy were compared to determine whether hypocrisy results from automatic or volitional biases. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Findings demonstrated not only that participants viewed their own transgressions as significantly more fair than the same transgressions enacted by others, but also that this bias was eliminated under the conditions of cognitive constraint. Hmm. These findings support the view that hypocrisy stems from volitionally guided justifications, therefore suggest that at a more basic level, humans possess a negative response to violations of fairness norms, whether enacted by themselves or others.
Hmm. This is reminding me of the "this is a golden child" moment in my youth, where I got in trouble for like talking, or like we had a substitute who like was kind of an idiot, and like all the other teachers like knew that she just was like just kind of like not great at being a substitute. Anyway, I got sent out in the hall for like talking repeatedly, and probably like when she was asking me not to. And our regular class, yeah, and this was in music class, and so like then our like homeroom teacher came by and saw me sitting in the hall, and I was like crying about being put in the hall, and I felt like it was like so unfair, and like I wasn't doing anything, but like actually I was, and I was fine with other kids.
You don't want to get in trouble.
If we're honest, yes. And I was fine with like other kids getting sent in the hall for the same behavior, but it felt like so unfair because it was happening to me, and I felt like intrinsically I was not a kid who got sent in the hallway. You know, like it didn't really matter what I did. Like,
questioned your identity. Wasn't
exactly. And so then, like when our regular class teacher, it wasn't like homeroom because it was third grade, saw me in the hallway crying, and she was like, "Oh my god, like what's going on?" And I was like, "She sent me in the hall." And I've told this story on the podcast before.
You have
like a slightly different bend for what we were talking about, but like,
yeah,
that she like also thought that it was crazy that I was in the hall, and like I didn't like actually end up getting in trouble. It was the weirdest like turn of events that I didn't deserve. And I think about that a lot as like when examining kind of like something like this, I feel like that moment really was a marker for me being a little douche and just thinking that I could get away with anything and that it was fine. So, yeah, this is
It's interesting to look at the story through that lens, too, because I don't think I've thought about it. You know, we've talked about it in other contexts on this podcast and in life. And
yeah.
I don't think I've thought about it through the lens of like, oh, but part of my identity is like, I'm a good kid. I don't get in trouble.
Right. Exactly. It does feel like that.
But, you know, there's some privileged nuance wrapped up in there, too. And I think I certainly felt like I was, like, the kind of kid that didn't get in trouble.
And I think we were given privileges surrounding that. Like, I don't know. I feel like kids who were, like, in, like, the, quote, like, gifted class, like, if we did poorly on a test or something, it was usually attributed to, like, external factors. Like, they were like, oh, like, were you tired that day? And, like, you could maybe, like, have an opportunity to retake it.
Well, I don't remember this happening to me.
There was a teacher that I feel like it was in fourth grade. Well, we had different teachers. And that happened periodically. Not always to me, but like that was a thing that would happen sometimes. And so like same deal where like why does one kid like deserve the opportunity to retake something that they fucked up that not everyone else does?
Well, and to bring it to moral hypocrisy and applying different standards to different people, probably being given the opportunity, and I'd still feel like this as an adult, if, you know, something went wrong and somebody's like, oh, let me give you like a second chance on this thing that like really it wasn't warranted, I probably would feel inclined to be like, yeah, I totally deserve this. But if I saw other people getting it, I might be kind of like, well, fuck that.
And it's a feeling of like, well, fuck, like I did it right on the first time. Like, why do they get to like totally fuck it up and then like be judged by the same standard?
Totally. 100%. And sometimes I judge people who park in places they shouldn't. But my mom and I, for a period of time, totally used my grandma's handicapped hangar to just like park in nice places at the mall at holiday time. So
that
I'm
is an excellent example.
And I would have judged someone else for doing it. But mom was like, quick, grab, you know, Mimi's handicapped thing. And I was like, damn straight, we're parking somewhere. Like, it's December 20th. I'm not fighting this.
No. I'm not walking 2 miles into the mall.
I was like, should one of us limp as we enter the store? We can't know.
I had that pregnancy belly in my car at the end of high school that I wanted to use for the expectant mother parking at the mall. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I never had like the chutzpah to do that.
Well, we can't all be assholes like me and my mom. Okay. Similarly to this study that we just kind of broke down, there is a long-studied phenomenon known as actor-observer asymmetry.
Okay? Oh,
Which in part describes our tendency to attribute other people's bad deeds, such as our partner's infidelities, as an example in this go-round, to their characters while attributing the same deeds performed by ourselves as due to situational influences. So very on brand with the test-taking shit you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And this is ringing like some early psych bells for me, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I pulled up stuff about this study in an article headed Less Evil Than You, Bonded Self-Righteousness in Character Inferences, Emotional Reactions, and Behavioral Extremes. Okay.
Would that fit on a license plate? Less Evil Than You, LSSEV? Nope.
No, but nope. Let's work on that. We could
LSEVL. TN letter U.
What if we made like bracelets that were kind of like Livestrong bracelets, but they said less evil than you? It's kind of like, what would Jesus do? But like less evil than you. I would wear that.
That's fun. I would wear that too.
Oh, I think a lot of people would. A lot of people think they're less evil than you.
Everyone thinks that. Literally everyone thinks that.
We're here to tell you how everyone thinks that. Listen, this is our moneymaker. Trademark that shit. Less evil than you. Insert cash.
Who's the market? Everyone.
All right. Now, here's a little abstract on this little ditty, okay? Recent research suggests that self-righteousness is bonded arising more reliably in evaluations of amoral actions than in evaluations of moral actions.
Of course.
Interesting, right? Mm-hmm. That we're like digging into the self-righteousness about stuff that we know is not, you know, a moral choice. So we'll get into it, but some infidelity stuff rather than, let's say, we're maybe not like patting ourselves on the back and not, you know, patting other people on the back who decided to recycle and like compost shit or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
But this is like, we're talking about the dirty. Mm-hmm. So here we test 4 implications of this asymmetry in self-righteousness and the mechanism explaining it.
Okay.
We find that people are less likely to make negative character inferences from their own unethical behavior than from others' unethical behavior.
Mm-hmm.
We also believe they would feel worse after an unethical action than others would. So like committing the same action. And believe that they are less capable of extreme unethical behavior than others.
Mm-hmm.
We observe weaker self-other differences in evaluations of ethical actions. This occurs partly because people base evaluations of themselves on their own moral intentions, leading to predictable individual differences. People more likely to ascribe cynical motives to their own behavior exhibit a smaller asymmetry in righteousness. Self-righteousness seems better characterized as feeling less evil than thou. Ooh, that's really, that's another bracelet. Yeah. That's the update. Less evil than you, less evil than thou. Than feeling holier than thou. So I like this because it's not like I'm better than you. It's like I'm less shitty than you.
Yeah, and I have less propensity to be shitty than you. And I am intrinsically, who I am is less shitty than you.
Yes, 100%. Wow. And this sounds corny, but when I was reading about this, I got to thinking, because we joke on here at times about how you were a horrible bully, and we've told stories about how you threw rocks at me.
I'm sorry for laughing about it now.
No, it's funny. It's, you know, listen, guys, I was personally victimized by Jamie Ryan.
You were.
But the part of this that sounds corny is like, we can talk about it now. And we had this moment on one of these episodes recently where you were like, I don't know why I was like that. And I was like, well, you had just moved. You're like about to become not an only child. And you were like, oh, wow, there are a lot of reasons I probably was lashing out. And here's the thing. This is the part where I feel like I sound corny. But it's that kind of thing of like, everyone has a story. And I feel like if I knew the motives behind like a lot of other people, the way I know them about like when you and I have done shitty things, like we know the inner workings of the other person, or
what's
like,
going on underneath, like why that would happen, what the situation is that like made someone like not deliver on something.
Right.
And to that point, like, I think that there's been, I feel like, some pushback on like so much like true crime stuff. And what I mean, by that is that with like biopics or like the like Ted Bundy, like Zac Efron movie or anything where like you get a backstory that kind of humanizes someone who was a serial killer.
Who was like evil. Who is eviler than me. Go on.
Who we all think was eviler than me. I think that there's been discomfort among viewers and like some people of the internet who it's, you know, gotten some backlash that. Even things like last podcast doing like these backstories of killers and talking about like their childhood and traumas and like things that may have shaped later behavior that don't make that behavior excusable, but not like explain it, but just like show you the roots. It does like breed compassion because you start to see that killer as like a 3D individual.
Yeah.
And that of course makes you more compassionate because like the more familiar you are with someone, like the more exposure you have to a person, like the more likely you are, to your point, to see like their story rather than like exclusively an action that was like quote evil. And I'm not advocating for us all to like cry
love
for like
Ted
the
Bundy.
yeah and he's not even the best example because I feel like he had less childhood trauma than like a lot of these guys, but
sure.
I'm just saying I think that there is something there
Ed
with
Helms.
With us like gaining a little bit of compassion in kind of like a maleficent way with real killers, and that being uncomfortable because it diminishes the less evil than thou feeling, like we are less far away from like a killer morally if we understand why they got there. Does that make sense? Like, I think it's uncomfortable for people to have any kind of compassion for that individual or to like see them as less evil. I think is threatening to the idea of like yourself and how like not evil you are.
Yeah, well, it goes back to this identity kind of issue. And also, 100%. I just want to correct myself. I said Ed Helms, who is an actor from The Office. I meant Ed Kemper, but you knew what I meant.
And I was picturing Ed Kemper.
Okay, great. Thanks
very
for being
tall
on board
Ed
with
Kemper,
me.
Yes.
Yep. Very, very tall man. No, but totally. And I think, that's an interesting thing of like, where do you draw the line in having compassion for like other people? And I don't know that you should, you know,
I don't know that you should either. But you have to examine yourself like hard, but also compassionately. I don't know. I think it does help you keep a better handle on yourself if you're like more compassionate about the worst of other people.
Totally. Totally. And I think that's the thing. And this is like the corny bit, but like the everyone has a story kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It does paint this perspective, and I understand how we would be like, well, my actions, you know, were less evil than yours because I know why. Whereas with other people, you could categorize and be like, this person was a real shithead if you don't know the whys behind it. Even if it's just 1,000%. Like somebody being a bitch in the checkout line.
Mm-hmm. And in like a systemic way. Yeah. In like a systemic way, I think we see that like somewhat represented in Orange is the New Black, or at least like that was some of the intention behind the show, was that like Piper is this white character who you see why she's in prison. And like it was this like she made a couple bad decisions, and then like there was just like a bad situation that she shouldn't have said yes to. And like years later, it caught up with her and she had to go to jail. And you feel like sympathy for that. And the attitude around her character at the beginning is like, well, I like really should be like let off with a warning for this, or like this is just like very unfair. Like it was only one time. And she gets into she goes to prison, and her mom is like, oh, I can't believe you're going to be there with like all these horrible women and like these hardened criminals. And very quickly, Piper figures out that everyone else that's in there like also has a story and has a reason, and like that she had, as like a privileged person, Piper had a lot more opportunity to not commit a crime than a lot of the women who she's in there with, who are kind of like forced into bad situations. And so I think that like that show does a decent job of like kind of opening up the perspective of like whoever it is, like criminals or like not, or just people you're not familiar with. Like everyone got to where they are for a series of reasons that are somewhat beyond their control.
Totally. I've never watched any of Orange is the New Black because I continue to be someone who's never seen any television.
For sure. Except the West, except all of the West Wing and crime dramas.
You know, yeah. And for the record, the West Wing was like I watched the entire series in 1 month, when I broke up with someone. It was like a breakup show for me, which seems like an odd choice. But, you know, here we are.
I don't know. It's somewhat like emotionally sterile or far away from your life.
I don't work in the White House. And exactly. You know what? At this point in time, thank God. So digging into this kind of experiment here of kind of, you know, holier than thou versus less evil than thou, and what was examined with that. I love those juxtapositions.
Right? I know, it's so good.
So they had some what we would call understanding variations in judgments of infidelity, an application of attribution theory. Okay. The current program of research examined how the four dimensions of the attribution, and I was like, oh, four dimensions of attribution? Tell me more. They list them as locus of causality, controllability, stability, and intentionality.
And we've talked a little about locus of control before.
I think we have, and we have talked a little bit about locus of control. And they say that these kind of four dimensions influenced judgments of a partner's hypothetical infidelity, and actor observed discrepancies associated with judgments of real life infidelity. In this experiment, there were two studies. And so the results from study one, where they had just shy of 400 participants, revealed that the dimensions of the attribution affected the extent to which adults judged a partner's hypothetical behavior as indicative of infidelity differently depending on the type of behavior. I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. When reporting on real life behavior, and this is in the second study with just over 800 participants, adults attributed the cause of their partner's infidelity as being a result of internal, controllable, stable, and intentional causes to a greater extent than when judging their own infidelity. And I think this basically illustrates the points we were just making, that I feel like, you know, some of this is maybe like the known nuance of your own life, but not contemplating the nuances of other people's lives or emotions. And in some ways, to me, this circles back on the narcissism shit about being the protagonist. Because you are this fully actualized like character or person, but you're maybe not allowing other people to be so multidimensional in your mind or in your life.
Yes, it is like exactly that, of not allowing other people to be a complicated character and just kind of reducing them to like whatever you can see and you're not going to dig in. So is this study suggesting that like one spouse, like if you were married and you suspected your spouse was cheating on you, that mm-hmm. you would be more likely to think that the reasons they were cheating on you were fixable than if you were cheating?
Yes. And it was also fixable being the controllable thing. Mm-hmm. And it, like, that your intention was there, that it wasn't like an accident. It was intentional, right?
Oh, okay.
That yeah. it was internal and that it was stable. So, and you could say like, this, you know, person did this, they could have fully stopped it. Like, they put themselves in here, they meant to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, let's say, like, I was the person exhibiting infidelity, I'd say, well, yeah, but, like, you know, me and my partner just, like, haven't been that connected, and, like, you know, our relationship's like this, and so, like, I just, like, wasn't getting my needs met. Also, like, my job's been really stressful lately, mm-hmm. and, like, I didn't mean to cheat on them. It just, like, kind of happened because I was, like, vulnerable, and, like, maybe I had something to drink, and all of these kind of, again, like, more nuanced, I don't want to say excuses, but, like, you're giving, like,
explanations, greater, sort of.
Greater grace for there to be room for an explanation.
Right. Whereas, like, everyone has an explanation for everything like that, because, like, something always happened before a bad event. Like, there's always reasons leading up to it. And it's just, like, we're not willing to hear that out in other people. But it also doesn't, like, in the case of cheating, it's, like, that doesn't make it okay, though. Like, you might, if you are the cheater, like, kind of self calm with like thinking about that, like, oh, it was all of these circumstances, but it's, you still have like control of each of those small things. So it's just interesting that like we don't recognize that in ourselves, that like, oh, like I also chose to have like a drink maybe with this person, etc.
Totally. 100%. And yeah, it's just, it's interesting, the nuance there and how you would give it to some people and not others. And it's funny, I think cheating is actually a really interesting example, mm-hmm. because people can come to it too with like kind of a loaded perspective of like, if they've ever cheated before, if they've been cheated mm-hmm. on before, if like they've never been involved in a cheating scenario and like can't imagine how they would be, like mm-hmm. all of those things too will really probably affect
absolutely.
The picture you'd kind yeah. of paint. And how we interpret even like fictional characters and like how we judge that kind of thing mm-hmm. playing out in like a movie or TV.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things too that's interesting about cheating too, as an example, is it's something we have like this really emotional response to. So let me mm-hmm. give you a weird scenario.
Yes.
Which thing do you think is just like worse in general? cheating on a partner or driving a school bus full of children while drunk?
Ooh. What
wow. do you think is like more like wrong?
Probably the school bus.
Yeah,
even
endangering
though, like,
children.
Yeah, so, seems... like, it's much worse, but I think the temptation...
Pause.
Yes.
No, I went now, I'm like, okay, cool, it's much worse to drive children drunk. Okay, now let's say your girlfriend could either drive a school bus full of children drunk and endanger their lives, or she could have sex with someone else behind your back. What would make you feel more upset?
Honestly, maybe I know that most people would say like probably, or maybe, I don't know, maybe if this was actually happening, I would say it would make me more upset for her to have sex with someone behind my back.
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, think about but it of like actually happening. Like, what would you be more emotional about? Obviously, the moral answer is like, fuck, don't endanger a bunch of innocent kids. Like, we know that that's
totally
wrong. But like,
but I think I also though feel like I don't know if I would like ever trust her again in either situation.
No, that's fair.
Because also, like, if she's gonna drive a school bus drunk, like, then she is capable of all kinds of shit.
Right. I mean, so. Truly. I think about that, though. I think about if I put myself in that situation, that, like, I know that driving the bus full of kids drunk is more morally, like, object. Like, it's wrong, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, if presented with the news of that on, like, both hands from a partner, I'm like, I know which one would probably make me cry.
I feel that they both would. I don't know. I feel very upset about.
What the fuck about the bus?
Yeah.
I don't know I'd be like, how could you do this to me?
No, I think it would just make me question, like, the kind of person that they were and, like, what other kinds of decisions they would make. And so in the same way really that cheating would, honestly, I think both. Go ahead.
I mean, both are very wrong. I don't want to actually experience this, but I just feel like if both of these things happen to you, like, the reality would maybe be a little bit different than you're answering.
Totally. Totally. I'm definitely open to that. I think I'm also, like, very concerned about. I
feel children, like, in a bus.
Yeah. And if you do that, like, I feel like you also will cheat on me. I don't know. Like, your decision making is reckless. I see through lines.
But I mean, I think it's a very for all intents and purposes, I think infidelity is a very triggering one, and one where we, like, start to judge people's whole character. So maybe that's your through line. You're like, well, if you cheat on me, maybe you drive
that
a
is,
bus full
that
of
is
drunk
exactly
kids
what
or
it is both of these are a detriment to character.
Yeah, but we're judging them. But, like, you could do either one of those things and, like, would maybe be like, yeah, but, like, you know, I didn't think I was going to be driving the bus that day. Whatever. I don't know. Huh. But here's the thing. These, like, self-serving double standards could really explain the common feeling that incivility is on the increase. Let me say it again. Mm. We have a common feeling right now that incivility is on the increase. Would you disagree
indeed.
With that?
I would not disagree. In no way would I disagree.
Right? So recent research has also showed how we view the same acts of rudeness far more harshly when they are committed by strangers than by our friends or ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I love these negative biases. Welcome to the hauntedest time of year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your sense that rudeness is on the increase is probably just another self-serving bias. Let's get into it. Okay, so lots of us think that other people, just at large, are getting ruder.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least are, like, judged on countless U.S. and British news columns and opinion polls that they're getting ruder. That's what the kids are saying.
There was even a sign in Cincinnati on the highway about
that. What did it say?
It said something kind of cheeky about, it was like, keep the distance, like, in person and on the road, like, no road rage. Because, like, it was, like, a problem in the Cincinnati area during quarantine, earlier stage.
Some road rage.
Before the city fully reopened itself early.
People were, like, trying to kill each other in their cars, you know? If you can't kill them in person, kill them on the road. I don't know. Who's to say? Okay. But are we really in the midst of an unusual plague of incivility? It seems unlikely, given that most eras make the same complaint. Instead, we're probably falling prey to a self-serving psychological illusion. Here we are yet again, thinking we're better than other people. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm, I'm ready.
There was a new study in the European Journal of Psychology, in which an international team of researchers asked more than 200 participants to imagine being involved in various instances of rudeness, such as a bus passenger talking too loudly on their phone, or someone in a lift sneezing without covering their face. And as someone who, you know, pre-COVID times really lives on public transit, I got specific negative feelings about people who are loudly on phones on buses and trains. I don't answer my phone on the bus or train. Like,
no, it's weird. Yeah.
I hate it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, it's rude. And, like, look at me being like, I'm better than these people on their phones on the train.
I don't ever answer my phone on the train.
Oh, you would never.
I would never.
Listen, so some participants in the study were asked to imagine that they were the perpetrator of the incivility toward a stranger. Others, that they were the victim of the stranger's incivility. And in each case, they had to say how serious the infringement was, how much it hurt would be caused, and whether it was due to a temporary situational factor or due to the person, whether the perpetrator would likely apologize and whether the victim would forgive them. Mm. So we're like, is this person a straight up asshole, or was this just like a situational thing? Or also, like, in tandem with this, if they did it and they were rude, would they apologize and would they be forgiven? Or, like, would you apologize and would you be forgiven? Which I think also adds these, like, very interesting other components about, like, can you walk things back and do you allow others to walk things back? So the participants viewed the same infringements very differently, no surprise here, depending on their perspective. The role of perpetrator, they saw the incivility as less serious. Like, hey, it's not that fucking big deal to be loud on the phone. Like, whatever, go on. More due to the situation, maybe it was a really important call, we can't know, less likely to cause hurt. Other people aren't really bothered by this. It's not a big deal. They'll get off the bus, whatever. And then thought it was more likely that they would apologize. I would totally say I'm sorry. But that they would be less likely for their apology to be accepted. Yeah, fuck you, bitch. So there you go. Conversely, when they were the victim, they saw the same rude act as more serious, more deliberate, and more likely to cause them hurt, and less likely to come with an apology. And yet, they said they would be more likely to accept the apology rather than, like, brush off the situation, right?
Well, they're doing everything right in every area, clearly.
Well, moral high ground shit. In other words, our instinct is to assume that our own rudeness is milder and less deliberate than other people's, but also that we're much more tolerant and forgiving of other people's rudeness, even when theirs is more serious and deliberate.
Oh my God. And it's so narcissistic to, like, assume that, like, other people's kind of casual rudeness, like such as talking on the phone, is like about us and is like hurting us rather than being like situational for them. It's again just like making ourselves constantly the protagonist of everything.
100%. And when this whole experiment was repeated, but with the participants imagining being rude to a friend or a friend being rude to them, so not just like a stranger on the train, right? The results suggested that we mostly adopt a favorable bias toward our friend's behavior just as we do our own. So it is specifically all the strangers out there who we assume to be especially rude and unforgiving.
Oh, yeah. That's part of why highway driving's so difficult.
Right. And the strong difference between what is expected from self and friends and what is expected from strangers, especially with regard to restitution kind of behaviors, is striking and may account for much of the popular moral outrage at rude behavior, according to the researchers in this study. And specifically, in our modern era, they believe that more and more of the people we interact with and whom we may perceive as uncivil are in fact strangers, and our biases to see strangers as both more uncivil and less likely to apologize may then lead us to see the world as more and more rude.
Absolutely. And again, to like, I feel like we've talked a lot about, like, the more you're exposed to, like, a person or a kind of person, the more compassionate and empathetic you are toward them. Like, when I meet or interact with people who I know don't know any gay people, I feel like, I don't know, like, maybe a strange sense of responsibility to, like, represent my group well so that, like, those people perhaps have, like, more compassion for, like, other gay people or, like, legislation rather than thinking that, like, we're coming for, like, the idea of marriage and, like, our goal is to ruin it.
Well, I know how you want to ruin the institution, how you, Jamie Ryan, want to fuck up marriage. I do. It's my goal.
It's always been my goal. You
always wanted to ruin
marriage. Marriage for others. Yes.
Yeah. Take down marriage for other people. Fuck them.
But yeah, of course, like with strangers, we're going to be the least compassionate. And then if you take that a step further beyond strangers, then what about like strangers that don't look like us, strangers that don't look like our neighbors? Like the more other and kind of like outside of like the rings of how much we know people and more familiar, like the less and less understanding we become, which is, you know, really an issue, clearly, now and always.
Yeah, I mean, truly. Well, it brings into account other things, because as we've talked about this, it's like, well, if you don't know this person's full story, but you feel like you know yours, you're more inclined to give these, you know, social graces that you might not apply to other folks. And that's kind of some of the whole, like, we're dealing with that across the board with everything we're talking about. And it brings into like an even more extreme, to your point, when we pull in things like implicit bias, mm-hmm. when we think about things like karmic justice and about like, well, these people deserve this shitty way
that they are
in their lives and whatever. It's dark. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how we get there. And also pretty deeply disturbing. But I think in some ways humbling to then maybe take from this, and this would be my positive spin of some moral hypocrisy, because where we go, like, is this ever a good thing? Mm-hmm. I think, like, psychologically it can be good to give ourselves compassion for times that we mess up. Like, I feel like that's important. Mm-hmm. And, like, the learning factor that comes from this one to me, too, is also, like, hey, maybe if I, it's again, and in that kind of cornball way, but be like, well, what if it was me? Like, how would I feel about what this other person's doing? Are they really less evil than you?
Yeah, like, just, you know, I'm going to keep my evil measuring stick handy. I'm joking, but now I'd like to make one.
I'd like you to make one. I would love to know what increments it measures with.
We'll see.
Okay, but real talk, do you think there's anything like overarchingly like more positive or more negative to this point of, I don't know, me trying to find a like a silver lining of sorts here?
I think that you're right about it's good that we can be compassionate with ourselves. And you saying that made me think about like all the times that I'm like really beating myself up for something that I did, or like shame spiraling at night.
And oh, sure. When I'm like, remember when I knocked that picture off this person's wall 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Right, you. Right. And so like that kind of spiral and that tendency mentally goes against the idea of like us being maybe overly compassionate or easy on ourselves. But then I was thinking that maybe the shame spiral is more about like narcissism and like our pride. And maybe it's not about actually being concerned that we're like more evil or evil at all. I don't know. I feel like we're pretty easy on ourselves unless it's something that hurts our pride. And then that's no good. So I'm struggling to see a positive in this, other than if we can all be aware of it and attempt to apply the same compassion that we have for ourselves to other people's sort of like imagined scenarios.
Sure.
That's the best thing that could happen. But as far as like these biases, the way that they sit kind of naturally, really blows. And I think we're easy enough on ourselves. I don't think we need any help with that.
No, that's fair. I think that's fair. We are. I'm less evil than you. It makes me think, too, this is just a kind of funny aside. I was listening to this interview with Lance Bass one time.
Amazing. Yes.
And I like him a lot.
I do, too.
Big fan. Shout out to Lance.
Friends with Kathy Griffin. Sorry, go ahead.
God bless. But he was talking about how he had like horrible road rage. And now when he drives and like somebody's driving like just, you know, super slow or something or whatever, he goes, I just tell myself that, oh, like there's a sick dog in that car. Like he goes, because I care about the dogs.
That's great. That's great. Like,
what an interesting way to give someone a full story, that it's not just like, fuck you, you're doing this on purpose.
No, and I try to think like, what if someone's like having a baby in that car? Like, what if someone's like really in an emergency if they're driving like a fucking jackass?
I appreciate it. A lot of people will be like, oh, there's a sick person. He goes, I think about a sick dog. I care more about the dog.
But wait, but there's something there, because maybe like we're more compassionate about dogs that we don't know than people that we don't know. So
well,
it's probably
because we could maybe give dogs the grace of like, they are just a dog. They don't
exactly,
know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's easier if it's a sick dog, not a sick person.
Maybe dogs are less evil than you.
And maybe that sick person deserves to be sick.
Maybe they deserve it. They're sick.
They did something to deserve that illness.
Oh, I can't. Oh, I can't. I, no comment. Oh, God.
Listen, we talked about karmic justice already.
We already talked about it. But I'm glad to dig into this moral high ground stuff and this hypocritic mm-hmm. stuff and how we give ourselves way more space than we give other people. And, some friendly reminders, that's all.
Yeah
Well, in true why are you like this fashion, I think we've got to pivot into a verbal game.
Most definitely.
So cue the vibraphone.
Cue it. All right, so to start these games today.
Ooh,
I
games. Games. Oh,
I have a would you rather for you. Okay, so would you rather have kind of permanent golden child status, meaning that like you can never get in trouble for anything, there's like no consequences to your actions, like you're treated by like authorities and like maybe like at work, anywhere where you're kind of like judged on performance,
you're getting a pass.
Yeah, you're getting like a full pass and like those people like assume you're amazing, however mm-hmm. because intrinsically you are, apparently. However, everyone else like actually thinks that you're a piece of shit, and like deep down like your family and friends like really know that like you're skating by for like unknown reasons.
Oh wow. Okay.
Or would you rather have kind of like a Stephen Avery situation where were or are like punished? So maybe like you have to go to jail for a period of time, or maybe like you have to like pay a lot of fines pretty continuously. But there's some kind of punishment that like really affects your quality of life. However, everyone knows that you're innocent, or that like it was caused by just like extraneous circumstances. Like no one thinks that like you're intrinsically bad, but you have a shitty life situation.
Wow, this is really hard. I feel like perhaps too this could play into some feelings of like white guilt shit.
Oh yeah.
Of like, what is, I mean, on some level the more virtuous thing like seems pretty clear that you'd want to be inherently a good person, and like, you know, how the misfortune, like that's the more virtuous choice. I think this kind of goes back though to another conversation we had recently, where I just think I value like the connectivity to people so much that I wouldn't want to be like actually disliked by people.
Oh yeah. And I figured that your answer would be that it's more upsetting for other people to have like evil feelings about you quietly in your life.
Do you feel differently?
I think that if I were presented with this in a real life sort of genie kind of way, mm-hmm. and I could not choose to keep my life like normal in the middle how it is,
right.
I think it will be really hard to choose to not take like the golden child status. However, I don't want to like forfeit like the authenticity of all of my relationships.
There's some complicated issues too, because like, well, that's the thing I was going to say, is this like a life sentence in, you know, prison, in which case I might take the golden status.
Let's say not a life sentence. Let's say you do like 6 months in jail, but then you're a felon, and then it's like really hard to get like a career job, and that like that, and you can't vote, and you know what I mean? Just like things systemically really hurt.
Yeah. That would be tough. I would take it in the 6 month phase. If it was like a lifetime sentence of anything, mm-hmm. I'd be like, no, I'm good. I'll live a lie. That's fine.
I would take it if it was, a 6 month sentence as well. And then the fallout after. Yeah.
Okay. Ooh,
because then you maintain like friendships and community through your life. Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's more important.
Mm.
All right.
Well, I've got another question for you.
I'm ready.
I want to circle around. We mentioned, and you were like, oh, I've never heard of this Lake Wobegon effect.
Oh, yeah.
The fictional town. So I want to give you a would you rather here. Would you rather be a part of Lake Wobegon where all the women are strong and the men are good looking and the children are above average, but you're not? Like, you're not strong, good looking, or above average.
Okay,
like,
but I reap the benefits of that society.
You'd be a part of the society. Everybody would know that you were more evil than them.
I'm right? the Quasimodo of this society, then.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Or you are like the most intrinsically good person, right? Mm-hmm. You actually, everybody else is actually, you know, more evil than you, right?
Okay, yeah.
But you have to be around people and like your group and your family or whatever, all these people who are like shittier than you, and you're living on this gold standard and it's not affecting perhaps the outcomes necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Which situation would you want to be in? Well, either way, you're lonely.
Yes. So either way, you're very lonely. And so it's like, would I rather kind of reap the benefits of a society that theoretically is like functioning pretty well? Or do I want to, want to feel the burden of constantly dealing with people who are just morally corrupt around me? And even like have that be my reality, even if it's not like true.
Right.
I'm going to say like it feels pretty good to be a big fish in a small pond. And so it would be hard, I think, especially like imposter syndrome stuff would come up so hard if I was like at Lake Wobegon or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I would feel just like so other, probably in both situations. I don't know. I think I'm concerned about the politics of the world where I'm the most moral person.
That's an area of concern.
yeah. So honestly, maybe for safety and quality of life, maybe I do choose Lake Wobegon, even though it's tempting to be the best and brightest in a community of horrible people.
Yeah, I worry about the power dynamics of Lake Wobegon. Like,
so do I. And I'm like fully aware that I'm probably just going to be like collecting trash and like sweeping sidewalks. As a neither strong nor beautiful nor intelligent nor moral person in that community. I hope I don't end up in jail, just like repeatedly in jail. Okay.
I mean, they're such a good society. Maybe there's not a jail, you know?
Maybe.
but then maybe you just have to live in the woods alone. I don't know.
Oh boy. Well, you know, it'd be safer to live in the woods if everyone was good. You know, the woods are scary because like you don't know who's in there. Anyway, what would you do?
I don't know. I'm with you that this also feels like a real piece of torment.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I think in some ways, it sounds easier to be, you know, the best person because as we talk through this, you know, moral hypocrisy, perhaps we already kind of view ourselves that way.
Yeah, I think that that's probably more similar to our real life experience.
Yeah, it's probably less of a change, which, wow.
I know. But would we experience a lot of negative reinforcement in that simulation, though? Like, are people around us, like, more likely to, like, punish others and us?
I don't know why they would have
Maybe
to
not
be.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe just each other.
Maybe some dark shit. But I think if you really are, like, you know, truly good and not just a moral hypocrite and thinking you're really good, I think like seeing the bad would be even more like emotionally devastating.
I think that
from like a greater existential place, maybe I have to go to Lake Wobegon because I think it would be like less emotionally painful.
It could be better vibes there generally.
Yeah. Although it'd be emotionally painful to be the shittiest one, so that's a vibe too.
It would, yeah. So competitive people probably, you know, don't go there.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Well, if you'd like to go to Lake Wobegon, or if you are avoiding it at all costs as the golden child of your own world, let us know. As always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at Why Are You Like This Pod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And stay tuned for the wrap-up, the final baby installment coming at you later this week, to kind of give you the rundown of, like, I mean, are we all doomed? Now that we've told you everything that's wrong with humanity, are we all doomed?
Are we? And watch out for that full moon at the end of the month, guys. It's coming. We can enjoy it, but just be aware.
Be aware. Bye.
Bye.